So today I'm just going to talk about math and explain how it applies to the larger field of logic. One of the things I've noticed is that people are very linear in their thinking. This is something you've heard often. I'm sure you're very linear in your thinking. And this is something that's problematic with Kant. I use the word problematic, but I probably shouldn't because people who use it are usually crazy, but you know what I mean. Is something wrong with Kant's philosophy that his thinking is very linear, like everything has to be viewed in absolutes? So in the realm of ethics, It's not really going to have like one size fits all answer for everything. And that was probably the worst part of Kant's philosophy, was that one size fits all and like everything that's bad must be always bad and everything that's good must be always good. Obviously, we don't even follow such a thing because, you know, as Solomon says, to everything under the sun, there's a time and season. So the first thing we're going to explain, we obviously know linear logic. We have 1 plus 1 equals 2 or x plus 2 equals 6. We solve for x. That's very linear logic. And then you have a level above that, which is exponentiated logic, which whenever there's multiple dimensions to something, and this is true in mathematics, whenever there's multiple dimensions, you can have multiple answers because each dimension requires that there's a new answer. So you take a quadratic or cubic equation, there'll be 2 for a quadratic and 3 for a cubic. And then people say, well, all right, well, obviously there's more than one answer. Things like, yes, but there's only like maybe 3 or 4. There's infinitely wrong answers too. And that one answer that's right, it must fit into the circumstance or the dimension that it's describing. So when you're doing geometry puzzles, like you're solving for a geometry equation, you have to understand that the answer you're going to get is only going to fit to one side, and that answer will complete the square, which is really neat. If sometimes you're looking at a geometry problem, you see that the other answer solves for one of the other sides. That's actually a really neat thing about it. But not to get into that, like you see that the answer must fit to one of the sides lengths only. And then you have like negative answers, which on a square, you can actually see a negative answer on a square. Actually, you can see, like, so say like you have like x squared is a 3 squared. Well, you'd have a length of 2. That'd be x minus 1. And then the height would be whatever it is, like x plus 2. That, and then you'd have like 6 plus 4, that's 10. So you'd have x minus 1 and x plus 2. It would be 10 if that'd be the quadratic thing, I'm pretty sure. And the reason for that is because, like, that's just how the shape would work. It seems like I'm doing this like really advanced math. I'm not. You could do this too, I promise, if you figured it out. Okay, so let's get into exponentiated equation. And then you have what is going to be calculus, which is a whole other branch above the exponentiated equation, which in calculus, you have to assume the answer. And it's not an approximation. It's a precise answer. So when you calculate a limit in calculus, it's a very real and precise thing. It's just that the logic of calculus has to be assumed that it works. And the reason for this is that if you didn't assume this, you couldn't have any basic mathematics at all. So basically you take geometry and then you predict the answer through the ratios that would solve the answer, whether it's sine or cosine or, you know, like even very basic things like geometric series or even more complex things like curves, like in asymptotes, there's ways of determining that, which is like way too beyond me. That's beyond my level of comprehension. But you have to basically shape the logic around what would solve. And then this gets into the next thing about math, is that let's talk about sine and cosine. Sine and cosine relate to legs of a right triangle, and it's used in geometry to find areas and things like that, because it will intuit the shape. And why you take certain sides and sine and cosine is because the sine or cosine function will factor into the ratio and it'll get the right answer. Basically, that's why. Like, it'll either lengthen or reduce the side lengths to get the right answer or whatever you're trying to do. And it's important that these ratios are understood, because the same ratios are the same way that calculus is solved, is that the ratios in calculus are assumed, whereas in trigonometry, they're not. But the calculus ratios, we form the logic around what the answer would be. And this is important because there's certain simple calculus infinite series that you can like look at and you can see why they solve. And this is kind of how calculus gets framed, that very, very, very intelligent people, they look at these really complex patterns and then they predict the answer in more simple patterns. And that ratio, just like in trigonometry with the sine function, it shapes the thing into the right answer. And this is why sometimes logic has to work is that we have to assume the answer on something easy and then shape our answer, shape our logic around forming what would become the answer in these more complex things. And this is something that scientists are not doing right now. And this is why we're getting such wonky ideas in the scientific community, is because they just simply, either they don't know this anymore, they never did, they just somehow got along for a long time without understanding it. I don't know. But yeah, it's like sometimes you have to assume the answer and then broaden that to more difficult things that we don't know the answer to, but we shape the logic of those things into the new thing. And I think this is like a good way of explaining how logic works in higher levels. Like, you know that logic works with like syllogisms and modus ponens and modus tollens, but there's more nuances to logic that I think like those things are kind of the linear equations. And then we get into the more complex things such as the quadratic, where we have sometimes different answers depending on the circumstance. It's like you can't just have a one size fits all solution to everything. And then you have the calculus thing where you have to like assume the answer because it's right, and then you work from there to even more difficult concepts. And that's like one of the things I think we're not doing, and I think this is like one of the problems with modern logic in general, is that we don't have comprehension of like really the multiple dimensionality of things, or even the sometimes you have to make an assumption about a thing being true. You can't, for instance, and this is what I think people are trying to do, trying to prove the limit by just continually solving the geometric series. And like, you know, you ever solved calculus, there's a geometric series, you have to add them up and it's really tedious, but then you shape that those coefficients into a formula and then it gives you the answer. It's like you have to sometimes have the formula for something you do understand in order to get to something that you don't understand. I think this is like the problem with logic in general, is that there is sometimes a leap in logic necessary to get to your more complicated truths. And really that's what logic's for, is to get from basic things to more complex things. And if you can't put those things together and get to the more complex things, then logic's not really working at all. It's basically not working to begin with, because it's what logic's used for. It's not to reduce everything down to abstract principles, but to build things up to more concrete principles and get to unknowns that we didn't know before, but we do now because we took these things, put them together, and we got to a new conclusion that is also true.